do one webinar a month on topics of interest. And this month's topic is centers around disability insurance planning. And I just also want to invite those that are listening that if you have specific topics that you would like to get information on, you can send me an email, and I'd be happy to consider those topics for the schedule for the webinar series beginning in September. I would like to thank those that are listening that have worked with me in the past, and I also like to thank those at the NAPA headquarters for being so cooperative in helping me network and get to know the advisors throughout the U.S. and helping them with the insurance planning. You know, today's topic is disability planning. As all of you know, good planning begins with a question. And today I have several questions I've put together that I think are important that lead us down a road with our clients and to help us understand where they're at with their disability insurance program and in an attempt to make their portfolios more competitive. I want to pause for a minute and just give those of you who don't know me a little background. I've been in the insurance business since 1978. I started as a group long-term disability specialist with Union Mutual, which is now Unum. Did that for 2 years, and then I joined John Hamner with Disability Income Specialist, and we began to his specialty was marketing privately owned individual disability policies to physicians and dentists here in Colorado. And then in 1990, I went out on my own. It was around then also that I started to talk quite a bit with advisors throughout the U.S. in helping them come up with solutions. So my background is mostly in disability insurance planning, although we do life insurance as well as the long-term care. So my goal today is to give you a few ideas, a few concepts that hopefully you can take with you and start to implement immediately into your practice. Before we begin, I just want to mention that if you have questions, you can use the question box in your control panel to submit questions, and we'll get to those at the end of the talk. And if you're having any technical difficulty, you can also use that question box to communicate with us, and we'll help you. And also, we are recording the presentation, and the recording and slides will be available on our website under the disability insurance section in a few days. Here's where you go to pose your questions right there in that question box over here to the right side of your screen. I've already given you a little background on what I do and those here at the firm. You know, I was counting up the years of insurance industry expertise that we have here, some advisors that I turn to for advice in the different areas, as well as my staff. And, you know, it's over 200 years of combined insurance experience in the areas of life, disability, and long-term care. So I thought that was pretty amazing. I think what it says is I've networked with some pretty old advisors, but, you know, they're very wise, and they've seen just about everything, so I rely on them very heavily for feedback. Let's just get to these questions. I thought this would be a good way to start, and there's a purpose behind each of these questions. I'll just review the questions with you briefly, and then I'll get into why I think they're important questions to ask your clients. Now, as the subject matter in the webinar indicated, I'm going to be talking a little bit about how to get discounts for your clients in the area of disability insurance. As you know, the number one objection to clients when it comes to getting good quality disability insurance is the price. So any way we can come up with ways to make it more affordable, the better our clients will be. And so, but I think female professionals will be the most able to benefit from some of the discount concepts I'm going to talk about today. One of the questions you can ask is if you've got a business owner or even an employee that works in a business, this number one question is really geared towards the business owner. It says, would you be willing to spend $200 a year towards the cost of disability insurance for at least two employees in order to get anywhere from a $900 to a $1,600 a year savings on your disability insurance? And, of course, we know the answer to that is a resounding yes. And I've got an example that will follow that will show how your clients who own their businesses can get that kind of leverage by having multiple policies purchased within their business. Another question we have is if you've got a client who is not an owner but simply an employee within a company, and they're considering getting some supplemental disability insurance, maybe they have group insurance already and they're looking at an individual supplement, one of the things you'd like to try to find out is, does that employee know two other people in the firm who have a similar financial situation that might be interested in getting even just a basic individual disability policy? Because once we get three people in a company, the discounts that I'm going to discuss with you become available. Another question, is your client an employee of a hospital or a university or a mid to large size corporation or even a professional association? Sometimes hospitals, universities, they've already arranged for discount programs with certain insurance vendors. It's rare that I find a hospital or university that doesn't have some type of arrangement for their residents and interns. So that would obviously be the first place to go to take advantage of some of those discounts, which for men can be probably 10 to 20%, but the discounts for the female professionals can be anywhere from 35 to 50%. Just by taking advantage of some of those programs that are available. Give you an example. Union Central has a significant discount program for physicians who are members of the AMA. It's a 15% discount. The nice thing is, which represent about a 15% discount for men, but for women, since the rates are unisex, it really equates to about a 45 to 50% discount for women, because women don't pay the women rates, they pay the male rate. So there's a lot of leverage there, and that's just one example. So if you have clients that are members of the AMA and they are interested in looking at disability insurance, Union Central would definitely be one company to explore. Another question for a client is, have you ever tried to purchase disability insurance and had a hard time getting it? Sometimes with multi-life packaging of policy within a business or a practice, companies will give concessions on underwriting. We had a case recently. We had 17 anesthesiologists out of a group of about 30 that purchased individual disability insurance. Some of the policies were large. Some of them were just minimal. But we had a high enough percentage of the eligible anesthesiologists where one of the anesthesiologists, a principal in the practice, was able to secure an unrestricted disability policy that, and he replaced a policy he had which had several restrictions on it. So that's just an example. Another question is, when was the last time your company got a second opinion regarding their disability package? This leads to many things, including the review of the group disability coverages that might be there. We are constantly rewriting group policies that have become dated and need upgrading. Also, as your business owners, do they know that they can purchase a separate disability policy that will cover most or all of their business operating expenses if they're sick or hurt and can't work, and that these policies will even pay for the cost for your client to hire a replacement until they either get well or until they have to sell the company? You know, there are other policies as well that I find most business owners are completely unaware of. For instance, there are policies that they can purchase that will cover their business or practice loans. Oftentimes I see professionals assigning their personal life or disability policies to a bank or a lending institution, and that is definitely one thing you don't want to do. There are policies that are separate that are designed just to cover loans, and many business owners are completely unaware of this. Also, they seldom talk about buy-sell. Many of them will buy term insurance to get buy-sell coverage, but they won't buy the disability insurance, and that's often overlooked. And then lastly is the retirement protection program, where you have clients that they can actually buy disability insurance to help self-complete their retirement plan funding if they get sick or hurt and can't do that. So there's many items that a business owner needs to be made aware of, and at least to have them you know, check off on it. And then another question would be, let's say you've got you have a client that has a group disability coverage and they want more coverage, but maybe they can't afford it, or they're uninsurable, they can't get additional coverage. One idea is to see if they can pay the group premium themselves and therefore generate a tax-free benefit from the group policy. And right there they get about a 20 to 25% increase in benefit just by paying the premium themselves. And as most of you know, those group LTD premiums are very reasonable. So that's just another idea for your clients that have group disability coverage. Now I'm going to get into some of these samples, and just to show you the kind of discounts that are possible with multi-life, and I will. This section of the talk is you could basically label it's multi-life disability insurance planning, where we're not just singling out an individual client, but we're trying to find others that might want to get involved and purchase at the same time that the client is purchasing. Actually, it doesn't even have to be at the same time. Most companies will allow a one-year lag and will give the multi-life discounts to once we get three or more people in a business to purchase. So on the left, as you can see, this is a female, age 40. This is a $6,000 a month benefit, payable to age 67. It's a fairly typical type of disability program. And the premiums on the left, the GR stands for guaranteed renewable. Basically, that is the policy that's described down below, but without a rate guarantee. So the rate is not guaranteed. The non-canon guaranteed renewable price is the same as the guaranteed renewable, only that rate is guaranteed. Now, one of the things I want you to notice is look at the difference in price. The same product, one without a rate guarantee and one with. So I find for many women professionals, it's important to have that discussion as to how important is that rate guarantee. Historically, the policies have not had any rate increases, and even if this premium went up 75%, it would still be less than the $4,500 that client's being asked to pay today. So this is one strategy for getting discounts, particularly for women who pay 30% more than men to begin with, a way for them to get discounts, particularly clients in their 50s as well, because there's less time for a rate increase to have a negative impact on their overall spending for the policy. Same exercise here with the male, age 40, guaranteed renewable, and then the non-canon guaranteed renewable. So all the terms and definitions are the same, except one has a price guarantee and one does not. Over here on the right, you get to see what happens if we get three people within a business. It can be the owner and two employees, or it can simply be three employees with a common employer. You can see that this is now the guaranteed renewable premium, $1,770, versus the $2,675 for the female on the left and $1,810 for the male on the left. So you can see it's a little bit better deal for the men, But for the women, it's a fantastic discount. And also for the non-Canon guaranteed renewable, it's $28.85 versus $45.35. So you can see what kind of discounts are available. So if we can create a multi-life purchase, it can really benefit your clients. It'll benefit the men slightly, but your female clients will benefit greatly. Now, this all leads to, okay, well, we have to get two other people to do this. And I wanted to show the cost of a basic plan. So here's a male and female age 30. The annual premium is $106 a year for this plan down here, which is 180-day waiting period, $1,000 a month benefit, a two-year benefit period, and a residual rider. So if your female business owner spent a little over $200 a year to encourage these two employees to purchase, then your female business owner gets the discounts that we've just described on this screen here. So by spending $200, there's a significant savings anywhere, like I mentioned earlier, anywhere from $900, $1,000 a year to sometimes $1,500 to $2,000 a year. So that's why that question is important. Now, the other thing that you can do, your client can do, is let the employees buy up. So they would buy up with their own funds, and then they could get a more enhanced, excuse me, my slides skip around here a little bit, they could purchase a more enhanced policy, which would have a 90-day wait, a $2,000 a month benefit, with benefits payable to age 67, with all the important riders. So that's a strategy for all of your clients, but particularly your female professionals. Now, there's also for business owners, I'm going to go back for a minute. One other thing I wanted to mention here when talking about these rates is there are also other policies, like, for instance, Guardian has a graded premium structure for their disability programs. And it's basically a step rate where the premium is discounted about 50% off the level rate and increases about 5% a year. They are repricing their graded premiums right now. They are going to raise the rates on their on any new business probably within 2 months. So if you have clients that are looking for disability insurance, I would encourage you also to look at Guardian, which is the Berkshire Life. Berkshire is a subsidiary of Guardian. And look at that graded premium, particularly for your female professionals. So let's skip ahead now and go to the business owners. Talk a little bit about overhead, business overhead expense insurance. You can see multi-life discounts are available with overhead expense insurance here on the left without the discount and then on the right with. Now you'll notice here that the female and male rate is different. That's because most companies do not have a unisex overhead expense policy. Now, Union Central does. And so the Union Central premium for over here to the right, if we had a unisex situation where we had three or more people covered, the premium would be for the woman would be more like that male rate of $1,650 instead of the $2,300. So it's real important when you're structuring recommendations, particularly to someone who owns a business, to make sure you know the right questions to ask. Now, overhead insurance, in case you're not aware, well, first of all, personal disability insurance provides income to pay for things like mortgage, car, schooling, groceries, the things that we live, that we spend money on day to day. Overhead expense for a business owner, these benefits are used to cover rent, salaries of key employees, utilities, phone, all the ongoing business expenses that will continue if that business owner is partially or totally disabled. It can also, as I mentioned earlier, it can also cover the salary to hire a replacement to come in and work the business or the practice until they recover. These premiums are for a $10,000 a month benefit that begins after 30 days. Overhead expense premiums are a deductible expense to the business as well. And one of the things I think that's important to mention, as far as getting three lives to purchase, most companies don't require that the three policies be the same type of policy. For instance, as the owner of my business, I could buy a personal disability policy. I could have two employees buy a personal disability policy, even just a basic plan. But then I could also get an overhead policy, which would be also at the unisex rate. So you don't all have to buy the same type of policy. It's just three people with a common employer that buy a policy each. But one could be an overhead, one could be a disability income, one could be a retirement protection disability plan, and that would qualify for those unisex discounted rates, which really favor women. Now, there's also coverage, as we mentioned earlier, disability insurance that'll cover any business or practice loans. Most policies have a $1 million limit. This is a 30-day waiting period, a $7,500 a month benefit. It's a $900,000 max payout. These are the rates to cover that kind of a loan obligation to a bank. Slight discounts. I am not aware of a unisex business loan protection program. From what I understand, Principal Financial Group is designing one. We asked some of those questions, and these were some of the reasons why I was asking. So I guess from that first part of the discussion, the one thing we want to take away is when we're focusing with a single client's needs for disability insurance, let's think outside the box a little bit and start focusing on, you know, where do they work? Do they have group insurance? Are there any offerings at work for any discounted programs? And particularly when you're dealing with a woman professional, these discounts can be really substantial for them. So don't just focus just on the client. Focus on the full picture and take advantage of, discounts. Have them check with their associations. Have them check with their human resources department to find out if there's already discounted programs available. So let me catch my breath here. And, again, don't forget, you can ask questions, and we'll field as many of them as we can when I get done. We're going to shift gears a little bit, and we're going to talk about a subject that always comes up in disability insurance planning, and that is how to marry the group coverage that one may have at work with an individual policy, and does that make sense, and why does it make sense? One of the things I want to say now before I forget is that on my website, which is ryan-insurance.net, under the articles section, there's an article called Max Benefits, and it's an article dedicated just to the concepts that we're about to talk here in part two of the discussion, which is combination of individual and group insurance. So you might go in and when we get done and breeze through that article. It's only a two-page article, but it gets into the pros and cons of group insurance, individual insurance, and why a combination might be best for certain clients. In my experience, I find that clients who have group disability coverage and have earnings over $100,000 a year are likely to purchase an individual supplement. I find that those that have income under $100,000, although they can qualify for some individual coverage, there's so much pressure on their income that they are reluctant to spend it on disability coverage. So let's talk now about group and individual combo coverage. group disability is available in many medical practices, hospitals, universities, corporations, even small businesses. And so it seems like it's always something that we're evaluating. And we want to talk about, you know, does it make sense to combine them? By combining them, we get to enhance the overall income replacement coverage by having a combination of plans. Instead of insuring 60% of earnings, we can sometimes insure 80, 90% of income. We can even insure, in some instances, 120% of earnings if the purchase of the insurance is done in a certain order. The individual policies, as you know, they cost more, but they do provide more. They have more clear definitions. They have riders that are available that most group plans don't have. They cover certain types of income like bonus and commission income that most group policies don't. And so that's another reason for combination coverage. Also, you know, individual policies are portable. You have an employee that leaves a company, goes out on their own. They have an individual policy that they can build up oftentimes without any medical questions asked at a time when they really need it. They're out on their own. They're taking some clients with them. They're going to have some service contracts, but they've got this individual policy with them as a building block. That's another nice reason to have private insurance. And for employers, being able to offer an individual product with a group product can help attract and retain certain key employees. Next slide is talks about, you know, what we really like about group insurance. It's definitely easy to administer. And pretty much in most instances, it's guaranteed issue. It can be guaranteed issue down even down to like three lives. So if you've got a business owner owns his or her own business, they have three or more employees, you really ought to look at getting a group LTD proposal and then maybe a private individual quote as a supplement. Particularly for clients that are having a hard time getting disability insurance, that group insurance may be their only option. And it's pretty cost effective. Group insurance is very, very inexpensive to purchase. Some of the considerations, group definitions are, you know, usually more restrictive. Sometimes the caps can be very low, the amount of coverage, the overall maximum benefit. Oftentimes, bonuses and commissions and incentive pay are not covered by the group policy. So you'll have an employee or you'll have a client come in and say, I've got 60% coverage at work. And when you really look at the, you know, the fine print, you know, it comes out to maybe 28%. Once you take out taxes and the fact that the $75,000 bonus is not factored into the equation. And then there are other limits, most notably the fact that the group insurance is not portable. And that can leave a client who, you know, one of the scenarios would be you have a client who develops a medical issue. They have this great group disability coverage, but they want to leave the company. They want to go do something else, and they're stuck. They're going to lose their coverage if they leave, and it's a real dilemma. So having some private insurance can help overcome that. This is a typical example. We've got a client who earning $200,000 a year after net income after taxes, looks like about $160,000 a year. Their disability coverage is $5,000 a month, so that is $60,000 a year, but it's taxable because it's all employer paid. So the net effect is about $48,000 a year in benefit. And, you know, if we're trying to get that client up to where they can, they can have the group, but look at the amount of individual coverage that they are eligible for in this scenario. So we must be careful when we tread with this group insurance because there can be many surprises. And even if the group, as you notice at the bottom, one of the assumptions is that the group policy has a $5,000 per month cap. One of the things you can do is go back to the employer and ask them to raise the cap. It probably will only raise the cost of insurance for the higher paid, and it probably won't be that big of a burden. And the, your client can even offer to pay for the increase. You can do split dollar with disability insurance, where your client pays a portion of the premium and the employer pays the difference. Now, even if that group policy didn't have a $5,000 a month max, let's say the group LTD plan had a $10,000 a month maximum, then this client could still purchase about $3,000 a month of individual coverage, or $36,000 a year in additional coverage, even if the group didn't have that low cap. So there's definitely room. And, you know, the obligation we have to our clients is that we at least explain to them that it's available. You know, here is what it costs to solve the problem. Here's why it makes sense. And at least have them sign off, maybe, you know, get them to sign off with you that it was discussed and that either they're going to take action or they're not. But it's always nice to have them check the box and maybe initial on that, just for your own protection down the road. I got these slides from a Principal Financial Group presentation that I made a while back, and so Principal's name's on here. But, you know, Principal's definitely a major player in the disability field. But, you know, we represent eight top companies, including Lloyd's of London. So when we do a search for one of your clients, I mean, we look at them all, and we consolidate the results to two or three, and then we would make those and then recommend one out of the three as what I would consider to be my top choice. You know, the nice thing about individual policies are the premiums are guaranteed, whereas group they're not, and the benefits are guaranteed. The benefits are tax-free because individual policies are usually paid for by your client. The definitions internally are more favorable than group. Bonuses and incentive pay can be covered, as we talked about. Discounts can be available, and the coverage is portable. And it can be employer paid or employee paid. I mean, it can, and as I mentioned earlier, it can even be split dollared. By split dollar, I mean, let's say your client's getting a long-term policy payable to age 67. What you can do is determine the premium for like a two-year plan. So let's say the total premium is $1,000, but the premium attributable to the first 2 years of benefits is, let's say, half, $500. So your client pays $500, and the employer pays $500. And if there's a claim, then we can show to the IRS that the first 2 years of benefits were paid for by your client. And here's the document and the statement that we prepared when we did this. And so the first 2 years of benefits are tax-free. And then after a two-year claim, the benefits become taxable. Or you can flip that around. So that's what I mean by split dollar on disability insurance. The next example, this is just a census example. It shows, you know, with and without a combination approach, and the percentages of salary replacement on the right. In this scenario, bonuses are significant, and the bonuses are not covered by the group plan. Now, human resources could go back to the carrier and request that an amendment be made to the plan to cover bonuses. Some companies will do that, some won't. So that could be a first step, and then a second step would be to talk to the more highly compensated. Certainly the CEO and the senior VP here are candidates for, well, actually all of them except the lower paid manager are really candidates for some private supplemental insurance. And then the grid on the bottom shows the purchase of some private insurance to go with the group, covering the incentive, the bonus, and then the replacement ratios are very significant. Shifting gears just a little bit, and once again, don't forget, if you have questions, just jot them down and shoot them over to us in that question box. Some top reasons why clients should review their disability policy. Well, number one would be they might want to adjust their benefits, either upward or downward, based on income. they might want to see, it might be a good time to say, hey, you think there are others in your business or practice that might want similar coverage. If we can find two more people, it might mean a significant discount for you. You know, I find this is often overlooked. Let's say 3 years ago, we underwrote like a financial advisor earning less than $50,000 a year, CFP. They might get a 3A occupation class with their disability insurance. But now, for the past 2 years, they've made over $75,000. Just by going back to the company and showing them tax returns, clients can maybe improve their occupation class. And every class is about a 20 to 25% difference in price. So if you go from a 3 to a 4, you know, it's 20, 25%. 4 to a 5 would be the same thing. So that's one thing to look at is when you bought your policy, you know, how are things different now than when you first bought your policy? Oftentimes there's, they're looking for number of years in the business. They're looking for earnings track record. And if those things have just improved over time, might be able to get some discounts. Also, clients, sometimes they get exclusions on their policies or ratings or policy design restrictions that can sometimes you can go back and appeal based on improved income or medical or occupation situation. So that's the end of part two. Just want to make sure when you're evaluating your group, your client's group long-term disability insurance, that you ask the right questions. What is the net effect of this benefit? Is all of your compensation insured? Is it important that it be portable? Those kinds of questions are important. Before I go on, now I'm getting ready to go on to the third and final part of the presentation. And this is something that I want to talk about. Disability insurance planning is confusing for one very important reason, and that is that it seems like if you had six policies on your desk, a client could walk in with six policies, say, here's my disability coverage, will you look at these for me? And it's possible that there could be six policies, each with their own separate definition of disability. What I've listed here on this grid in front of you is the six most common types of definitions of disability, and some are better than others, and depending on your client's occupation, you might want to recommend one over the other. The first one is the classic own occupation definition, where a client is unable to perform the substantial material duties of their own occupation. And the reason I want to go through this exercise with you is to just try to help you become more comfortable with how uncomfortable this is. Because I'll tell you, 9 out of 10 insurance agents don't write disability insurance because they just don't want to have to try to keep up with this. So if I lose you on this, then I'm not, you know, don't shoot me. It's not hard. I mean, it's not easy to get. Now, the own occupation definition is simplest to understand. It's pretty straightforward. If you get sick or hurt and can't do your job, you get paid full benefits. Even if you can do some other job, you still get full benefits because you can't do your own. Very easy to understand. Transitional own occ is the new kid on the block. This is about a three-year-old definition, 3 to 4 years old. It works very similar to the own occupation definition. There's one exception, and that is that If I'll give you a scenario. If I had an own occupation policy and I was a physician and I was making $20,000 a month, and I got disabled, I could no longer be a physician, but I got into the real estate business with my brother-in-law and I was making $20,000 a month selling real estate. Well, my own occupation policy is going to continue to pay me full benefits because it doesn't take into account earnings from a different job. With transition own occ, it does. It would take your income. What it says is that there's no reduction in benefit if you go to another job, and this is only if you go to another job, that there's no reduction in benefit until the income you're earning at this new job plus your disability benefits that you're receiving exceed 100% of your pre-disability earnings. Now, in the real world, that's highly unlikely to occur. And so, for all intents and purposes, the transition ONOC definition is every bit as good as the ONOC definition. Now, there's a couple of exceptions, and one would be if you've got a client who's younger, a resident, intern, making $40,000 a year, 5 years from now they could be making $400,000 a year. I would prefer the ONOC policy there because it's more likely that that person, if disabled, could rehab and get into another line of work and make as much or more income as they're making now as a resident or intern or new business owner whose income is expected to go up 10 times maybe over the next 5 years. So if you're in that kind of a situation and the price of ONOC coverage is similar to the other definitions here, then I would go with the ONOC. And in fact, I would go with the ONOC if prices are similar. One thing in the medical community is you can have companies that have ONOC coverage that want to charge $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a year for a policy, and then you might have another company that has transition ONOC where the premium's half. And so in that situation, since there's so little difference between the two definitions in the real world, I would go with Company B that had the transition ONOC, and knowing that I'm really not giving anything up and taking advantage of that discount. And the other situation is if a client has a very high percentage of benefit, maybe they've got group disability and private, the more individual coverage they have or disability coverage in general, the less favorable the transition ONOC definition can be. But really, you know, when I look at it and have analyzed it, I have no problem recommending it. I think it's fine. Modified ONOC is just a slight variation of the two we've mentioned. Residual benefit is there are policies that are residual policies as a standalone. Most of you have seen that term. It's typically a rider to a policy, and it's basically partial disability benefits based on loss of earnings. So it is sometimes issued as its own policy or as a rider to one of the three we've already mentioned. Any reasonable occupation, you see this a lot in group insurance. It's not as scary as it looks. Unable to perform the duties of any occupation that is reasonable based on training, education, and experience. And many policies have an earnings test. And let me explain. What is the definition of reasonable? And the courts have determined that a reasonable occupation is one in which you could be, if you were engaged in a new occupation, one in which you could be expected to earn at least 60% of your previous earnings within a 12-month period. That is what they consider to be reasonable. So it's a much better definition than you think, and not to be I would not just automatically discard a policy because it has that feature in it. To me, it's a very fair definition. Sometimes you'll see that in group where you've got an own occupation definition for 2 years changing to any reasonable occupation. Now, the last definition is similar to what we see with Social Security. It's the least favorable. It's better than having no coverage, but it's the most restrictive, and it's just unable to perform any occupation for wage or profit. There's no reference in there to reasonable based on training, education, and experience, and there's no earnings test measurement. So that is the least favorable definition. So that's about it. That's all you're ever going to see. I know it's more complicated than that. I mean, but that is, you will probably not see a policy that has a definition similar to the ones you're looking at here. You might have combinations of them, but that's it right there. And then a quick scenario, and I don't think I want to get to some of these questions, so I'm going to kind of try to get through this. Different disability scenarios, able to work and own your own job, on a reduced basis, unable to work in own job and not working elsewhere, unable to work in own occupation and working at a new one, and then not able to work at all. And it shows how each of these definitions differ in their treatment of those different scenarios. And really, depending on your client's occupation, any specialties they have within it, their earnings history, the makeup of the company, the type of industry they're in, will really determine which of these definitions is most favorable to them. When should your client insist on an own occupation policy? The client is in a highly, as we talked about earlier, a highly specialized occupation. The client has a very high benefit to income ratio. Then I would prefer to use the own occ policy. The cost of an own occ policy is within 10% of the cost of transitional or modified. Then I would err with the own occ policy just for its simplicity and perhaps maybe better treatment at claim time. And then if a specialty own occupation letter is important, then you should seek one. If you've got a client that's a surgeon or in a highly specialized field, you might try to see if you can get a specialty letter. Companies are reluctant to send those out. Some still do. But it just refines the own occ definition, makes it more precise to what your client does. I also want to point out that there are some additional disability income education tools that I have on my website. And if you go to my website, and then you can see in the left-hand column, it says Disability INS, INS, that's for disability insurance. There's a section at the top of this page that talks about intro to disability insurance. You can even request a quote online from us, and we can get you proposals. There's a really nice disability link that I'm going to talk to you about. The link is to the Council for Disability Awareness, and if you go to that link and you go there, it'll take you to their website, and it's full of information regarding statistics, real-life stories. There's even a section for financial advisors to go in. There's checklists available. It's just a terrific place to go to get information that helps you understand the issue better, and also a place to send a client where they can actually see real-life stories of people using this coverage, and helps bring the message a little closer to home. That's about it. I do have a question, and there's one. The question is, could the modified own occ be differentiated against transition and or own occ? Is that correct? Did I read that right? Differentiated? Oh, so I'm wondering if the question is, how is the modified own occ different than the transition occ and the own occ? The modified own occ is different from the own occupation definition in that the example I gave earlier, where the physician making $20,000 a year changes occupations, goes into real estate, and is now making $20,000 a year in real estate. In that scenario, the modified own occ policy would not pay a benefit because when you choose to go back to a different line of work with a modified own occ policy and you earn income, the more income you earn, there begins to be a benefit offset. That is how they're different. Now, from transition own occ, the same is true, but the transitional definition offsets benefits differently. As I mentioned earlier, if you choose to go back to a different line of work with a transitional occupation and your earnings in that new job plus any disability benefits you're receiving exceed 100% of your pre-disability earnings, then your disability benefits will be reduced dollar for dollar by the excess. That's the formula for income, how income from another occupation is treated. With modified own occ, that's typically a residual formula, and the way that works is residual takes the percent loss of earnings. So in the old job, I was making 20. The new job, I'm making 10. So the percent loss there would be 50%. So they take the percent loss of earnings in the new job, multiply it times the monthly benefit, and that would be the benefit you would receive that month. And once again, if there's no loss of earnings, you get no benefit. So I hope I answered your question, but that's some of the how they're different. So anyways, if there's no further questions, then that's going to be it. Now, you can email me or you can, I guess, use the question box. If something comes to mind, you can always just pick up the phone and call. Send me an email. Be happy to talk to you about how to structure disability insurance plans, both group and individual, for your clients to make it more affordable and help them purchase this risk management tool that all of us know is so important. So with that, I'd like to say thank you for your time. I hope you picked up an item or two here that you can begin to use right away, and get back to me if there's additional questions you have on this subject or any subject really as it relates to ensuring your clients. So thank you very much.